This is the podcast of Theophilus Church. For more information, visit our website at theophiluschurch.com.
John said to the crowds coming out to be baptized by him, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the coming wrath? Produce fruit in keeping with your repentance, and do not begin to say to yourselves, 'We have Abraham as our father.' For I tell you that out of these stones, God will raise up children for Abraham. The axe is already at the root of the trees, and every tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire." "And what should we do then?" the crowd asked. John answered, "The man with two tunics should share with him who has none, and the one who has food should do the same." Tax collectors also came to be baptized. "Teacher," they asked, "what should we do?" "Don't collect any more than you are required to," he told them. Then some soldiers asked him, "And what should we do?" He replied, "Don't extort money and don't accuse people falsely. Be content with your pay." The people were waiting expectantly and were all wondering in their hearts if John might possibly be the Christ. John answered them all, "I baptize you with water, but one more powerful than I will come, the thongs of whose sandals I am not worthy to untie. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and with fire. His winnowing fork is in his hand to clear the threshing floor and to gather the wheat into the barn, and he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire." And with many other words, John exhorted the people and preached the good news to them. This is the word of the Lord.
Be to God. You may be seated. Good evening, Theophilus. My name is Cameron, and I'm one of the pastors here. If you haven't gathered by now, tonight is a unique service that we're having in multiple ways. Today's the third day of Advent, so we're going to celebrate the third day of Advent, and with that comes a spirit of anticipation. So tonight, we are going to enter into that, and we are going to experience a sense of anticipation. But tonight is also a unique night because it is our last night with the Sloboda family, the founding pastors of this church. And so if I'm being totally honest with you right now, I don't know if I'm fully prepared for this evening. And when I talk about things that we're going to share stories and talk about things that we're going to talk about tonight, this really weird thing usually happens to me, if you know me, and my eyes start to sweat a little bit and stuff. I would appreciate it if you bear with me as I deal with this eye condition that I have. But tonight is also a night of celebration, and that is the tension that we're going to enter into and face. It's a night of mourning because we're going to lose people that we love dearly, but it's also a night of celebration because, my gosh, we're going to look back and we're going to reflect on all that God has done, and in that, we will rejoice. We will rejoice greatly. This is what this evening is going to look like. I'm going to talk about this passage in Advent because, you know, churches around the world are reading this passage today and talking about this as we prepare to come to the birth of Jesus in a couple weeks. But we're going to utilize that. We're going to focus in on one part of this text, and it's going to draw us into the story of Abraham. And at the end of this service, you're going to hear stories of how the Sloboda family and their faithfulness has poured blessing over our lives and our congregation's lives. A couple weeks ago when I was talking with AJ after service, and he was trying to put in his two cents that this service cannot be about them. He's like, "Just don't make this thing about me. Preach from the Bible." And so I'm going to honor that request. But I'm also going to sidestep it a little bit and say, we're going to preach the Bible, but we're going to do so in a way that honors this family and their faithfulness. Also, if you haven't noticed, that tonight is our family liturgy, and it is one of the best times of the year where we get to have our kids in here. If your kids are screaming and you get annoyed by that, I just invite you to get over it. And this is how we roll around here. It's a little bit chaotic, but we like it that way. So Desiree just read this passage. Actually, I'm sorry. Let me give three announcements before we get going because I don't have any other better place to insert this. Next week is going to be our first week without the Sobota family, and it might feel a little bit awkward because we're not going to actually talk about that at all next week, because next week is the Sunday before Christmas, and we're going to focus our energies on celebrating the birth of Jesus. So come next week, and we're going to celebrate that together. With that, for our meal next week, we're going to do a potluck Sunday, so bring something to share with the congregation. And then several of you have asked me, you've approached me personally and asked if there's a way that you could extend a love offering to the Sobotas, and they're going to tell you no. I'm going to tell you, feel free to do that. Just don't give it to Theophilus and tell us to give it to them. If you have something to give to them, go and give them that handshake, and then that way it clears us off the book. So we invite you to do that this evening if you brought something. Okay, now to our text. This story is this really, this story that we read in Luke 3 is this passage about Luke. Again, we're just going to deal with it here. All right. John the Baptist is this guy, is this really, really weird, wacky dude in the wilderness, and people, the crowds actually, are coming to him to be baptized. Now, this image, whenever I picture John the Baptist, he's that dude who doesn't own any shoes. He only has one pair of clothes. He hasn't cut his beard in probably 10 to 15 years. He only eats food that he can find in the trash can because he doesn't want to waste anything, right? This is this character of John the Baptist. He makes your head tilt a little bit. What is this guy all about? And yet there's something about his character that drives people to him. So these crowds, they come and they go and they visit John the Baptist out in the wilderness. And John turns to them and he has this really strange line. He says to them, as the crowd is approaching, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the coming wrath? Produce fruit in keeping with repentance, and do not begin to say to yourselves, 'We have Abraham as our father.' For I tell you that out of these stones, God could raise up children for Abraham. The axe is already at the root of the tree, and every tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire." Andy last week reminded us of the situation that the Jews found themselves in during this time. The Jews were in a series of years, they were in captivity under the Babylonians, and that went to the Persians and then the Greeks, and now they're in the Romans. They're under the control of the Romans. And they were holding on to this historic hope, this hope that they had that God would come and liberate them from their oppressors. Why? Because they were the children of Abraham. And they always had that to hold on to. And they were going out to John to be baptized. And John sees them coming out, his own people coming to him. And he looks at them square in the eyes and he says, "You brood of vipers, don't you dare claim your heritage as sons and daughters of Abraham if you do not allow that story, the story of Abraham, to change your life. Don't you dare do that." And that's where I want to pivot and focus our attention this evening. What was this story of Abraham? Why was this story of Abraham so important to these people? How does it apply to our lives in this very time and moment here at Theophilus? And what do we do with it? Abraham is perhaps my favorite character in all of the Bible. In fact, in a lot of your weddings that I've officiated, I use this very story about Abraham leaving his home country to this place that he doesn't know. Because to me, it depicts this perfect image of this wild obedience that turns into chaos, and that God works his magic or his beauty through this really fragmented life, this life that is so unpredictable. Abram and his wife Sarai, we don't really know anything about their early years of life. They lived in this place called Haran, which is today southern Turkey, right there on the border of Syria. They lived there, and we don't know anything about their life earlier, but we know that in Genesis 12, in the very beginning, Abram receives this call from God, and this call is very vague. He said, Abram, I want you to go, and I want you to go to a land that I'm just going to show you. And in that land, I am going to make your name great. I'm going to bless people who bless you. I'm going to curse people who curse you. And in you, all the peoples of the earth are going to be blessed. And so Abram and Sarai, they get this call, and now they have to wrestle with how to respond to that call. It leaves me in a place of wonder to think, what was going through the minds of Abram and Sarai when they received the call from God to leave the place that they knew to somewhere new, to start a new life without knowing what was going to be on the other end? I am certain that their anticipation of this event was filled with wonder, was filled with hope, was filled with anticipation. Were they going to pass through the lands where people talked about the cedars of Lebanon that they've only heard stories of? Were they going to see it? The great Mediterranean Sea, were they going to set their feet in the Mediterranean and learn what that was like? What was it going to be like? And they had enough hope and enough anticipation that got them up off of their butts and moving down the road to this new journey, this new place. But what's interesting about the life of Abram and Sarai is it was so far from perfect. One of the first places we see them settling is in what is today like southern Israel. And they've left their home, they're in a new place, and they're experiencing famine in the land. The famine is so severe that they cannot support themselves. They don't have any food to eat. And so they're forced to flee to Egypt. And they go to Egypt and they're so scared about what Pharaoh is going to do, because Abram's wife is so beautiful, and is he going to kill Abram? And so they lie, or they tell a half-truth, and it messes with Pharaoh, and they're, When they're making that terrifying journey to Egypt, what's going through their heads? What is the tension that they have with God in that moment? God, why did you bring us here? This isn't the blessing that I had anticipated receiving. Well, they eventually get let out of Egypt, and Pharaoh wanted them so far away that he gave them cattle, and he gave them money, and he gave them, just get away from me. I don't want God to curse me. And so he sends them on their way, but now they're in their next predicament. They have too much money, and they have too much cattle, and they have too much people, and the land cannot support them. And so Abram and Sarai and Lot, they decide that they're going to go their separate ways. I wonder if they were on their couch in Haran and they had to think about parting ways with their nephew, if their decision would have been different. But they were there. Lot goes one way. Abram goes another way. My eyes are working out. But they had a promise that they could hold on to. God was going to make their name great. But that was going to come through an offspring. But God wasn't giving them an offspring. So what did they do? They took matters into their own hands. And they came up with this brilliant plan. Why don't we have a kid with our maidservant here? And we'll produce a child. So Abram gets his firstborn son, Ishmael, through their maidservant, Hagar. Only to shortly thereafter have God bless Abram and Sarai in their old age with the son, Isaac. And the result of this reality that they found themselves with is Sarai jealous of Hagar and asking her son or her husband Abram to send his firstborn son and the maidservant away. Did Abram know that he had to give away his firstborn son when he set out on this journey? Did he have any clue? And if he did, would he have set out in the first place? And so he sends him away, but he still has the son of promise, the miracle child of his old age. And God says, take him up on that hill and go sacrifice him. And just when he gets to the emotional place to where he can actually make that journey, God stops him, and then he's going to live the rest of his life with the psychological consequences of almost putting a knife in your child's chest. This is the story of Abram and Sarai. And in the Gospel of Matthew, the very first sentence of the gospel message, it says, and this is the story of Jesus Christ our Lord. Abram begot Isaac, and Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot. What is the point of that genealogy? It's saying this story of Jesus does not just come out of thin air. It's a real story that is connected to imperfect humanity who God sowed a beautiful story through. A tremendous story through this. This is what John the Baptist is reminding the people who come out to him in the wilderness. He's saying, unless we understand that this story is not about us, it's not about God who just favors us because he just likes us more than everybody else. It's about a God who works beautiful things through his broken people. And unless we can enter into that story and be shaped and formed by that God, then we've missed the point. Abram's story is not Abram's story. It's God's story through Abram. There's this beautiful practice in Japan where when you take a lot of, in Japan, if you have a piece of pot, it's like this old thing that they do, and the pot breaks, if it breaks and it cracks, their way of restoring that pottery is they mix an epoxy-like formula that is laced with either gold or silver or plasma. And they take it and they sew it in and they put it in the cracks. Why do they do that? They do it not to accentuate the cracks, but they do it to remind you of the story of that pot and to show that amidst the cracks there can still be something so beautiful about this story. And Theophilus, this is our story. This is our story. 10 years ago, the Sobotas left their home in Eugene, having no clue what this next season was going to hold. But they did have hope, and they did have anticipation. And a part of that hope and a part of that anticipation was that this family and that this city would be their forever home. And now we find ourselves in a place and a time when God is writing a different story. And he's shaping this thing in God's ways, for God's purposes. And yet, and oftentimes when we look at that, it can be so easy to get distracted, by all of our cracks and all of our fragments. I have cracked our Theophilus pot with AJ and Quinn for 7 years. We've taken a hammer to this thing, just blown away at it. And time again, we're faced with the faithfulness of a God who takes our imperfections and sows something beautiful with it. The remainder of our time together is just going to give a window into the story of the blessing God has sown into our community through the simple obedience of a couple people. Has nothing to do with how mighty and powerful and wonderful they are, even though those things are true. It has everything to do with a faithful God who is faithful to take us and to sow something beautiful with simple obedience and faithfulness. I'm going to start our time with just a simple letter that I wrote. And after that, I've asked people in our community who have in some way been touched by either Quinn or AJ or them together or Elliot. They're going to come up and they're just going to share the way in which this family has blessed us as a community. After that, we're going to come to the table and we're going to partake of communion together, and I will have further instructions for you as a community of how you will participate in this at that time. But to start our time, I'm going to start with these words. AJ, Quinn, and Elliot, you are the Abram, Sarah, and Lot of Theophilus. 10 years ago, you sensed a call to leave your home and follow God to Portland. Your journey was filled with anticipation, hope, and a picture of how the story would unfold. You left with an image of Portland and Theophilus being your forever home. I imagine that you will look back on your time here and wish you had done a few things differently. I know this because I've worked with you for 7 years. We have made mistakes together, and we have bore consequences together. We have laughed together, and we have cried together a lot. The temptation will be to zero in on all the ways you could have made the journey smoother. But such a distraction will only blind you and us to the tidal wave of blessing you have poured over us these past 10 years. God used you to set a story in motion. And you have been faithful with that task. You have made mistakes in the journey and encountered innumerable joys and hardships, but I implore you in the name of Jesus to never let the challenges of this season rob you of the presiding truth that covers these past 10 years. You have stepped out and lived in faith. And as Paul reminds us in Romans 4, it is because of your faith that God credits you with righteousness. Your faithfulness has inaugurated a story from which the Isaacs and the Rebekahs, the Jacobs, Rachels, and Leahs, the Josephs, the Moseses and Joshuas, the Deborahs and Davids will emerge. As this story unfolds, it is certain that we will continue to hack our way through life, eternally dependent on a patient God who paints something beautiful with the mess we make. But today we look back and honor and celebrate your faithfulness. Through it, God has created the story that is his story. But you are the characters he chose to set it in motion. In these past 10 years, you have challenged us and taught us from young to old to live up to our name, lovers of God. We are different because we have experienced God's blessing through your faithfulness. As we take the time to honor you tonight, I want to charge you, Theophilus, to consider our responsibility to the blessing we have received. God blessed Abram and in turn told him that he will be a blessing. Will we follow the example that has been set for us by pursuing God fearlessly so that we can bless in the ways we have been blessed? So, Boda family, from the bottom of our hearts, we love you to the depths that words cannot express. Thank you. Thank you for your faithfulness.
It's all right. This will make sense in a little bit. Hi, church. I'm Tom. I was a little unsure of how to write this letter. It's difficult to look back, figure out how to say thank you to AJ and Quinn for being our pastors, our friends, for pastoring Theophilus. I thought the best I could do would be to just simply tell a story from my perspective. It's a bit of personal history recap, but I hope you'll be able to find some resonance with it when thinking about how the Sobotas have impacted your life. Dear AJ, I moved to Portland in December 26th of 2010. I'd finished undergrad a year before, had finished up some traveling and herbetry, and love had begun to beckon. Desiree was living here in Southeast. She started a treehouse and was co-leading a church plant. I was in a fairly transient state of being when I moved here. I was needing some spiritual grounding and discipleship, but I kind of stumbled into this weird little church plant that never provided much of that. And Des and I worked through all that, and we're fine. But over time, it created in me what John the Cross might call a dark night of the soul. It wasn't all bad. It wasn't really ever bad. It was just trying to take something from me that I didn't have to give at the time. We did, however, meet and befriend a couple closer to the wisdom years than we were. Some of you may know Dan and Ann Stargwald. Before they found themselves here at Theophilus, they were a part of our little community, and they had an amazing impact on our time there. When their time was done with our little church plant, they came here. We eventually came here too because they were here, and we've been here since October 2013. But AJ, our story starts a number of months before that. You were my customer, and I was your barista. You'd come into the now late Pete's Coffee on 37th and Hawthorne, set up your little mobile officing office, and start typing away, only to realize 40 minutes later you had never ordered your coffee. You and Cameron would have meetings there, and I got to know you guys. You'd allow me to interrupt your meetings with questions about Theophilus and yourselves, and you legitimized how I was feeling about my current church situation and never talked down to our little project. For that, I thank you. About June 2013, it became clear that we needed to dissolve our little church plant and go our separate ways. Except Des and I, we were married by then. Des and I took some time to go about different churches in town and attempt to hear and see what the Holy Spirit was up to in Portland. We felt so disconnected to a vibrant, Jesus-loving community. We needed to get our bearings. And you'd probably like me to tell you that Theophilus came out on top as the most tangibly Spirit-led community we came across. But really, we landed here because Dan and Ann were here. But if you know Dan and Ann, to be a place where the likes of Dan and Ann can feel at home and challenged, that speaks volumes. Theophilus is that place for many, if not all of us. And for that, I thank you. You and Cameron welcomed our weary souls into this community with no strings attached. We were upfront about our need to just hit a reset button on our church experience, find friends, and just be a parishioner for a while. No leadership responsibilities and no pressure to do so. You gave us all the time we needed. It gave us the chance to start new friendships for the first time as a couple. I know this is the case for many here in this room. And those friendships have been a source of some of the richest spiritual formation, discipleship, support, and love that I've ever experienced. They've celebrated us with us in our highest moments and carried us through points of deep despair. For that, I thank you. Over the last 5 years, you've become less and less my pastor, more and more my friend. Maybe that's not how it's supposed to work, but I don't really care. You've always given me the latitude to be as candor as my mouth wanted to be, held me in times of brokenness, and in return, been your true self as well. Over the last year or so, our conversations consisted less and less of my blubbery eyes and more of a shared quest to figure out our roles in this world, how best to love our wives and our sons. How do we navigate our day-to-day with Christ as our guide? What does that look like? The clear-cut answers may always be one step ahead of us, but you're always willing to seek it out with me. And for that, I thank you. In closing, I have two specific memories I'd like to share. AJ, look at me. It's rare you'll miss an opportunity to ask me how to fix this or build that. Admitting Quinn is really the wrench turner in the household. I remember one time I drove by your house, and you were struggling, using bungee cords to keep your front bumper from falling off. You remember. I stopped and gave you a hand. I was not about to let my pastor drive around like some of the hillbillies I grew up with. That was not going to happen. And do you remember? Y'all came over to our house, our little townhouse on Division, for dinner. It was early 2014, and we had breakfast for dinner because we were poor. Still kind of are. I made some common breakfast food, including some hash browns. I was skeptical about it first, but actually became quite impressed. And you probably declared something hyperbolic, like they were the greatest hash browns to ever grace this earth. But before we got to breakfast slash dinner, you were enamored with the canned goods on our wall. And as soon as you saw the canned beets, there was no going back. We popped that can. Within about 60 seconds of you walking in that door, and we shared the weirdest appetizer for a dinner for breakfast that I might have ever had by any group of human beings ever on this earth. AJ, Quinn, you've led this community of people with grace, passion. You've helped create a welcoming, healthy place for weary souls. You've helped create a place where we can be ourselves without the pressure of having to put on our church self. You've been vulnerable over coffee from this music stand, and you've led this church into a vibrant relationship with Jesus Christ. He's our sustainer, our guide. And for that, I thank you. I love you, AJ. I brought these beats for you.
Rachel Shubin couldn't be here tonight, and so I'm reading this letter on her behalf. Dear Quinn, you've been on my mind all week, and I'm so sorry I cannot be there tonight for your last evening at Theopolis. My heart and prayers are with you. We met almost 3 years ago on the first night George and I visited Theopolis. I remember it because I liked you right away. You were in the back with the kids, looking like you were having a ball, and you had a huge, normal person-looking smile on your face, plus an easy laugh to go with it. There was no officious stuffiness because you were the children's pastor and came with a cool title, which I didn't even realize until later, and no pasted-on grin because your husband was the main pastor and you were supposed to smile, because that's what pastors' wives do. Do you know how rare that is? You were just the you that you were and are. I love that from the very beginning, and it still makes me smile when I think about it now. The you that you are, it's a pretty great you. Having gotten to know you better, I love you even more. The first real conversation I remember having with you was at the women's retreat that winter, maybe 9 months later. I still didn't really know anyone, and I went specifically hoping to get to know people better. What I didn't expect was that I would flip out in the middle of the retreat. The last new friend I had made had died from breast cancer 18 months before, at age 32. As soon as I was around people I thought I might want to become friends with, I completely panicked. You asked me something innocuous that I don't remember, and I responded by crying all over you. We sat at the dining room table in the middle of a room stuffed with people who were each doing their own things, and you cried with me even though we barely knew each other. I love your tender heart. The other thing that stood out that weekend was you spent half the retreat on the floor in the living room with elaborate craft projects for the Sunday school kids, found out around you, plus glue, glitter, paint, and the other things that I generally try to avoid at all times, but that you were thoroughly enjoying. Your enthusiasm was contagious, and I remember sitting on the floor chatting happily and laughing with you while trying not to hot glue my fingers off. You are an excellent children's pastor. Quinn, every time you are with kids, ever, your heart for them is obvious. You gravitate toward kids, and you do a beautiful job caring for them and pointing them toward Christ in a way they will hear and carry with them. So well done. Watching you do this has been impressive to me for a couple of reasons. In addition to the fervor and excellence with which you do the work itself, seeing a woman in a role as any sort of pastor was new and encouraging for me. The church tradition we left had no women pastors at all, children's or otherwise. Women were not allowed to be elders or deacons or music leaders or to lead prayer or head committees for the most part or teach Sunday school classes or run community groups. This became a huge issue for me and was a material component of our departure. Theophilus has women in all or most of these roles, and seeing other women viewed as full, active participants in church leadership has helped me feel like I might have a place there as well. You were the first and most visible woman I saw in church leadership, and the difference in attitude between you and the frustration in the unacknowledged, pigeonholed women I was accustomed to being with, and was myself, was striking. You have been a constant reminder to me of what my own possibilities are and how church is supposed to work, each according to their gifts. You have been the sermon I needed to hear. And so today, mainly what I want to say is thank you. Thank you for your care of our little kids as they traveled through your children's church program. Thank you for your encouragement to our bigger kids as they volunteered with you. Thank you for all the work and the sweat and intentionality and love you put into Theophilus for so many, many years. And thank you for the care you've given me. Your work has value, and that value will continue to produce far into the future. Though you depart, your efforts remain. Go in peace, knowing that we are grateful for all you've done. I love you, Rachel Shubin.
Dear Miss Quinn, thank you for the ways you have dedicated your life to the children of Theophilus. We have grown so much over the 7 years that my sister and I have been learning from you. Every week you greeted us with kindness, excitement, and happiness. You always included everyone in everything, from prayer time to dance time to story time. All kids were always seen and always included. No matter how small the child or how silly their story, you gave them your full attention. We remember things like the story of Isaac's journey to get a wife because we couldn't wait to touch the sand in the sandbox as we traced his journey. We remember the importance of working hard to understand the parables of Jesus because those stories came in gold boxes, which were difficult to open, but worth it for the treasures inside. We remember that learning the books of the Bible through song and the 10 best ways, and that any story worth telling was worth telling multiple ways so that kids of every age could understand it.
We also saw how much intention it takes to serve children. By your example, you taught us how to engage the little kids in ways that got them to listen instead of ways that bored them. You showed us that no matter what was going on, there was a way to be excited and happy in that moment. You also showed us that when it comes to prayer, God doesn't care so much about what you say. He's more interested in just meeting you in prayer. Ms. Quinn, you have taught us so much about God, the Bible, and how to be followers of Jesus. We wouldn't be the same without the ways you have served us. Thank you for all your hard work. Love, Sydney and Riley.
Good evening. My name is Bryce, and this is my wife, Ari. AJ, when I first came to Portland, I'd been on the move for about 14 years, and I didn't have any solid relationships or any strong community just as a result of that, and I really lacked any kind of like strong spiritual men in my life, and consequently, I didn't really have anyone to turn to when I needed advice. Ari and I had just started attending Theophilus, and on a whim, I reached out to you to see if you'd be willing to talk to me, and you said yes, and that really, really blew me away because you just don't see a lead pastor of a church that's willing to, you know, sit down with some random new person that's just kind of waltzed in, you know, off the street. You scheduled time to have coffee with me. You sat down and you talked to me, and you engaged with me. And just the fact that you would do that, you would just take that time, it just meant so much to me.
Bryce is doing the lawyer thing, but I'm going to read. As you know, I grew up in a home that was pretty anti-Christianity, and then went to college in the South where I was faced with Christians who looked down on me as amoral because I didn't consider myself a Christian. Needless to say, when I met and fell in love with Bryce, I didn't know what to make of his faith. After Bryce met with you, you asked if I would be willing to sit down with you. And so it was our turn to meet for coffee. It was the first time I had ever sat down with a pastor, and you opened your arms to me, not only a complete stranger, but also a skeptic. And you told me that no question was off the table. So one meeting turned into two, and then three, and so on. For the first time, I began to see a lens into Christianity that didn't terrify me. I got to know a pastor who believes that his job is to love and not to judge. Throughout our conversations, you remained open and honest with me. You not only let me, but also encouraged me to ask the hard questions. You told me over and over again that you didn't want me to decide to become a Christian for you or for Bryce, but only if it was that what I wanted.
And when Ari and I decided to get married, I think, you know, as a result of that, you were the obvious choice for marriage counseling. You know, despite your schedule, which is obviously busy, I mean, if anyone that's attended Theophilus knows how much AJ is running around and doing things, you just took the time for us, you know, and you fit us in where you could, and we were all so busy, and, you know, I was just starting out my new career, and Ari was starting out a new career as well, and it just meant a lot that you would make that time for us to sit down and have really in-depth conversations, and your advice and your counsel really helped us a lot prepare for, you know, the challenge that is marriage. And it has been a challenge, as you know. This first year has been insane. And you were never one to shy away from the tough subjects. And you were honest with us, and you sat down. And as a result of that, there were a lot of tears and even some arguments between myself and Ari at times. But on the whole, you know, we walked away from that time together with you feeling loved and feeling like you really cared for us, and also a lot better prepared to face the challenges that we have had to go through.
AJ, you know this, but for those of you who don't know, 2 weeks before our wedding, Bryce went to his bachelor trip at Smith Rock. He ended up taking a 40-foot fall while climbing, and by some miracle, he survived and walked away without any brain or spinal injury. He did, however, break bones in all four of his extremities that left him in a wheelchair for a while. I still remember calling you from the hospital in Bend to tell you what had happened. Once you knew enough to know that Bryce was okay, you immediately shifted gears and asked how I was doing. When I told you how angry I was at Bryce, you showed me how that was not only okay, but actually a good sign for our future together. When Bryce's doctor told us that we should cancel our wedding, you helped us believe that we could still make it happen. Between Bryce's accident and my dad's illness, this year has been full of trials and tribulations. Throughout it all, faith and prayer has given me strength and peace. Thank you, AJ, for giving me the foundation to believe.
And we're just so thankful that God put you in our life. And it's just evident how much of a generous spirit you have. Even tonight, we were talking to you about some very hard things that we're going through right now. And you immediately just went into pastor mode and were there for us, talking to us. And I know that means a lot to myself and to Ari. And, you know, this is a night that's, you know, a little bit for you, obviously, and for you too, Quinn. But you're at the same time willing to still step out and help other people. That's just a huge testament to your character and, you know, I think to the way that God has used you in our lives. And we really appreciate that. We're fortunate to have called you our pastor, and we're very fortunate to call you guys our friends. Thank you so much.
Hi, Swobodas. You've been here for 10 years. We've been here for more than five of those, almost six. You have blessed us with your presence. For Emily and I, this has been one of the richest seasons of church we have ever experienced. Theophilus has been this beautifully misshapen, wonky rock that has been an anchor for our souls. Swobodas, to us you have been listeners, weepers, laughers, shouters, dancers, ukulele players, Roman candle pizza eaters, call you to make sure you're okayers. You've preached and we've listened. We've preached and you listened. We've made remarkable memories. AJ, your humility and openness as a person is what first told us that this would become our spiritual home. You have shown yourself more committed, more eager to grow, more attentive, more truly pastoral, by which I mean dedicating yourself to impossible, invisible work, dedicating yourself to something impossible and giving it everything, knowing that it's impossible. You've done that more than anyone would have a right to expect. You are a good pastor. Out of many examples of your pastoral care, one stands out. Your brotherly care has helped Emily and so many other women in this community bloom into their giftings here. You have helped undo years of negative messages about who they were or who they could be in service to the body. And you did it hardly saying a word about it. Just by the power of invitation and real support and total belief in what the Spirit was already doing in them, you never made it about you. Thank you. It's Speaking just for me, you've been a kindred spirit. I never had to hide the stranger side of my mind around you. And it is a strange mind. You were the creation-minded charismatic I never knew I needed. It was so good for my heart to realize that the voices I needed weren't all either dead or in my head. You've been such an influence, such an encouragement, and such a genuine inspiration. Quinn, you have also been a remarkable pastor. Under your care, our kids have sung, played, memorized, and felt the good news of God's love for them. You have given them gifts of the soul that are going to last the rest of their lives. You have inspired all of us to remember the ways that we learn from our children, that we grow to become like our children, that our children are more likely to introduce the love of Christ to us than we are to introduce the love of Christ to them. You've been understanding and forgiving, even when we accidentally poisoned you that one time we sent you home with our delicious homemade rose jelly. Sorry. It tasted so good. Elliot, dude, I've been there. It's not easy to be a pastor's kid. But you are cool and smart and funny and kind and honest and patient. We're gonna miss you so much. We love you exactly the way you've been and exactly the way you are now and exactly the way you're going to be in the future. You are our brother. Swobodas, thank you for blessing us. God bless you.
Dear Quinn, what a joy you have brought to the church and love and hope your family has given to the church. You guys have blessed the church so much. Here are some things I love about you. It is that you tell stories from the Bible really well. You are kind, helpful, you are brave. Yay, Quinn, yay, Swobodas. Thank you. Love, Lucy.
Coming up with me. Okay. About almost 5.5 years ago, we were looking for a new church to call home after moving up from Salem area and got tired of driving down to Salem. We've called Foursquare our home for a long time, 18 years, yeah. 5.5 years ago, I came to Theophilus. We knew you were up here. My wife, Brenna's cousin, spent some time with you at the Onyx House in Eugene. And I knew from the first time I was, Brenna knew, she came the week before me. She knew when she came that this was our home. And I came the following week, and I met you and Cameron and Joe and Quinn at your home for the Child's Bible School, BBS. And I knew this was my home. Maybe about a dozen people in this room know why I'm up here speaking. And I'll stay that way for now. But you know. And I didn't know why Theophilus was my home. I didn't know why AJ was meant to be my pastor and Quinn was meant to be our children's pastor, but there came a time when I knew, without a doubt, why I was here. being here at this church, and us and AJ and all of you, this is all part of God's plan. God's plan was to have me here. And God's plan was to have you guys in my life. AJ has and Quinn have been blessed to be the pastors of this church. You were meant to be my personal pastor. Like many of you, I've called upon him in my time of need, and he selflessly responded. I can't imagine how much of himself he's had to share with others and me. And like most of you, we really, really needed them when we called them. AJ and Quinn, I know it's time for you to rest. I know the demands on you have been great. I cannot thank you enough for giving yourself to me and this church. Your presence has left a ripple effect that will carry on and positively affect this congregation for years. As you move on to your next chapter, and I know God still has great plans for you in a different way. And I want you to know without a shadow of a doubt that you have made a difference in people's lives. Your precious time was well spent saving lives, saving marriages, saving souls, teaching God's word and God's love, and you made a huge difference. You made a difference for me. That's enough for me. And with the grace of God, you pulled me from the darkest place I have ever been. Thank you, my friend.
There's no way I'm going to try to hold a mic and read this at the same time. Swobodas. 11 years ago, on my 18th birthday, actually one of the first days I met you all in person, you made my mom cry, and you invited 40 strangers to celebrate my birthday together, and you bought me creme brulee. If someone had told me 10 years from now you would be officiating my wedding, I think actually that night I would have believed them. Other than making my mom cry, that was actually a pretty good example of how you both have served the church in Portland for nearly the last 10 years. It would take too long to recount the memories and ways in which you have shaped the last decade of my life. You made it much weirder, and you filled it with far more calories than necessary, though I admit I'm kind of a guilty party on that end. Elliot, first of all, I love you. Second, I'm not going to apologize for all the times I put you on a shelf when I was annoyed with you and walked away. You're too big to do that now, but that said, I love you. Swobodas, I am a much richer person for having you as friends and pastors of Theophilus. I'm going to keep it short and echo the sentiments in the previous letter. Go in peace. Go in peace. Knowing that God could not have found more able and willing servants of our church, our community, since its beginning in 2009, we love you very much.
The truth is, we could be doing this all night long. We're going to come to the table now and partake in communion with one another. That's what we do at the end of all of our gatherings. But this is where we invite you to participate in this. Though we can't all come and share our specific stories and interactions with the Swobodas, during our time of communion, when you come up to the table, I want to invite you, if the Swoboda family has in some way touched your life or somebody connected to you in some way, during our time, you partake in communion up here. Over here on both ends are two candles, and there's candles in boxes over there. I invite you to just grab a candle and to light it and to take it back to your seat and hold it after communion. So come and partake of communion together and grab a light if that applies to you and take it back to your seat. We're going to finish after with a song and a benediction, and then we'll go and enjoy our time together downstairs. So, Bodas, suffice it to say, you have blessed us beyond words. We love you so much. Please come to the table.
You've been listening to the podcast of Theophilus Church. We hope you've been inspired and challenged by what you've heard. For more information, visit our website at theophiluschurch.com.